right. This week's episode of Magnifier, we're joined by Tara Stone. How's it going, Tara?
Fantastic.
I let the guests introduce themselves, and I really don't think I could do you justice because you're so multifaceted and you have so many things going on. So let's, even if you touch on three of those things, there's plenty for us to kind of talk about today. So I'll let you kind of do the honors.
Thank you so much. I'll nutshell myself as much as possible. successful real estate career for now going on 25 years, took what felt like a major change, but something I had been working towards for the last 2 years. Still have my real estate license, still have a focus, but really transitioned out of transactional real estate with a 90% focus on coaching. So I'm a corporate coach for a large medical group here in the beautiful state of New Jersey where I live. Mm-hmm. And then I coach one-on-one clients, I coach teams, team leaders, other business entrepreneurs. And then I have a real passion also for working with women that are getting started or doing some major life changes and working with some empowerment there. I am also part owner of a vegan restaurant that I built as a passion project for my son that the community has completely embraced, but also stepped out from that so that it could go to the next level with the right person and I could keep some sanity about me. So real estate coaching, a little bit of restaurateur.
You know, we'll talk maybe a little later about that, but I like how you just said that you stepped away in order for a business to grow. And I think having that kind of self-awareness is so important, especially in real estate where you wear so many hats and do so many things. Mm-hmm. I really do want to dive into the coaching and the mindset stuff because this is a quote-unquote marketing podcast for real estate, but my thing is you can talk about tactics all you want. It's the implementation of those tactics and of that marketing. And if you're not in the right mindset, you're not going to thrive. But let's go back to the beginning, give people some context around how you got to where you are now. How was that in real estate for 20, you said 25 years?
Yeah.
Long time to be in the industry. You've seen a lot of cycles, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of booms and busts, and things have changed in that time, right? The advent of technology and all of that. How did you get started in it? How did your business grow? I understand you took some time out, and I do want to pick your brain about this, that when you came back in, you did about $6 million in your first year, which is pretty good. And you started from scratch.
Yeah.
So let's kind of dive into all of that stuff.
Absolutely. Started my career. Actually, my grandmother always had her broker's license. I never saw her actually selling real estate. I don't know that she did other than get some commissions when she personally bought homes. And I remember at a very young age, her saying to me, that's something that no one can take away from you. And as a young woman, seeing different things in my life where security was impacted by other people and realizing, ooh, you could have loss of security because of someone else's actions, I wanted to create things in my life that I had control over. And I started my career. I got my license. I started in commercial real estate. I was also in the restaurant business at the time. One of the owners had their real estate license, busy commercial agent. And I just said, let me shadow you. I will come work for free. I just want to be in the office. I want to learn. So I kind of cut my teeth at 21 years old, running around construction sites in 4-inch heels, with watching people look at me, just waiting for me to fail. And that really drove me, being a young woman in a commercial real estate industry, grew a really big backbone pretty quickly, took me about probably 9 months for people that would not take my call or return my call to people picking up when I called. And that was just hustling. And we'll talk about hustle maybe at some point on this podcast. Yeah. But when you're 21 years old, the hustle's a little different. But I loved commercial real estate and I liked it because it was very business and numbers driven, much less emotion. And as life would happen, I actually didn't work for about 4 years. I was in a long-term relationship, gave up a lot of my power and control and ability to make money because I was living a different type of lifestyle, a lot of travel, contributing to a relationship in different ways. And when I realized that that was no longer a healthy option for me to stay in, I had nothing. I left kind of... I joke around and we call it the fire. It was a bit of an abusive situation. So when I left, I literally took my dog and a duffel bag of some clothes, and that was it, and credit card debt. And I found myself in another state. I was in Massachusetts. And I thought, okay, what can I do? What do I know how to do? I bartended. I worked at the Chamber of Commerce. They hired me as their marketing director. I have no idea why. I had no qualifications other than I was enthusiastic. And I got my real estate license back in Massachusetts. Didn't go into commercial. I wanted to go into residential. And that really started my residential real estate career. I was on Cape Cod. There was a bank-owned opportunity to start working with bank-owned properties. So I was doing a lot of foreclosure and REO work, and then a lot of luxury waterfront work. Met someone else, a significant other, many years later, ended up coming to New Jersey, came to New Jersey, and while the bank-owned inventory was very different than what I was dealing with in a majority of a second home market on Cape Cod. So I headed a bank-owned team here in New Jersey. I found myself going in and, you know, doing property checks with drug addicts jumping out the window, people chasing me down the street, banging on my car. I think I was maybe 6 or 7 months pregnant and someone was literally chasing me down the street. And I thought, maybe this is not the smartest thing for me to be doing. So I really focused just extremely on luxury property and equestrian property here in New Jersey. Did a lot of solo work. I ended up opening up a partnership, a brokerage. Then I opened my own brokerage and had very happy clients, very happy bank account. And my rest of my life was going to hell in a handbasket. I was super focused on success being money.
Okay.
And I wanted to prove something. Opportunity to become a team leader for Keller Williams came to my table. They were opening up a new office. I bought into that. And so I was partners and stepped out of transactional real estate, went into team leader. And that's really where my coaching and my love for learning about how to help agents started. It was really nurtured from there.
Okay.
I could keep going, but I think that was a long talk. So if you want
That was great. It was very captivating, actually. But one thing I picked up on there was just you were very deliberate about the types of properties you went for, right? You were doing bank-owned, then you're doing luxury, oceanfront. What do you think the importance of that is? Because I think the mistake a lot of agents make, and I made this too when I did real estate the first go around, was just trying to take any business I could in any zip code. It didn't matter. I was going to be there. I was going to do the open house. I was going to try and get clients. I'd show you anything you wanted. But that's not really the best way of going about it. Can you kind of speak to that a little bit about niching down?
Well, that fear and commission breath, you know, living from commission to commission, we're afraid to say no to business. Mm-hmm. But we fail to actually quantify if it's actually business. So what I learned was there's a favorite quote that I love: beware the lollipop of mediocrity, lick it once and you suck forever.
I like that.
So I don't like to do anything middle ground, but you can't be an expert on everything. So I believe that if you find something that you're passionate about, that you can be an expert on, whether it's bank-owned property or luxury property or equestrian property or land or commercial, whatever it is, typically when you have a niche market, it's because it's not the easiest stuff to sell. So if you're like, if I can sell these unique properties, this other little four-bedroom colonial that a good friend of mine or a good acquaintance of mine wants me to take, this is a no-brainer. This is easy for me. And I get to choose, do I want to represent it? Or who am I aligned with in my community who would kick ass at that type of property and send the referral out, which gives a real gut check. Because when you send a referral, you're only getting, you know, 25, maybe 35% of what the commission would have been. But if you look at the time saved that you can then take that time, pour into your specialty. When you have a specialty, when you get a client, they know that they can't go to the other 100 agents on Zillow because they don't know what you know. So it builds in this almost instant loyalty where that client is less likely to agent hop around. And then also having time back in your schedule so that you can be focused on taking care of you, taking care of the people that you love, and doing all of those things in life that you're making money for. We're funding our best lives for a reason, but then we stop living our best lives because we're saying yes to everybody except ourselves because we're so fearful about not having money.
Yeah. No, that's a great way of looking at it for sure. I want to kind of talk about that when you came back in. I think it was after you stepped out for about 4 years mm-hmm. and then you came back in. Essentially, yes, you had the benefit of hindsight. You'd done it before, but the market can change very quickly. And after about 4 years, you are looking at a different landscape. There's different tech out there, different lead generation methods. You started from scratch. What did you do to get to that first year? Because I think by year three, you said your personal revenue was in the teens, right? 12 million, something like that?
Close to 20 million, yes.
Yeah. So how did you get there? What did you do? What did you implement? Is any of that applicable now, a couple of years later?
It's all applicable. And I've sold real estate, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey, left real estate, came back to real estate. And there's one secret. It's relationships.
Yeah.
And not being a secret agent. So I always jokingly say that real estate makes me look like a nicer person than I really am. And I think I'm a pretty nice person. But you're purposeful about the relationships. It's not that you're being disingenuous or unauthentic, but you're purposeful about the relationships that you have and that you're cultivating and nurturing and making sure that they do know how to do business with you. Whether I was in the team leader role or in the restaurant role, I was always having conversations and always letting them know, hey, here's what I'm doing. How can I help you? Is there anything I'm doing that you need help with? Or what do you need help with? How can I connect you? Being a connector and just not being afraid to get out there. So for me, social media was a great platform.
Yeah.
And I built up quite a following on Facebook, which my son is like, why are you on Facebook? That's for old people. I still love it. But it's really location, location, location for real estate agents, or really any entrepreneur. It's relationships, relationships, relationships. And continually nurturing them in an authentic way. And not just not calling someone for a year and all of a sudden calling them because you're sitting in a real estate class where they said you have to go make cold calls. You know, do you know anyone who's looking to buy or sell real estate?
I hate that script.
No. Yeah. I would rather pull my fingernails off than use that script. So for me, that's what my secret to success was and will be in the future. And I've also coached and seen people that are a little bit more reserved that aren't necessarily out there building tons of relationships have great success through technology. So I think identifying where your wheelhouse is, not trying to put yourself into what the person on stage said to do, really deciding, is that authentic to me? Is that something that I feel that I can be consistent with, that I can be committed to, and that I'm going to have longevity in?
Yeah. And so how did you, were these people you knew or you were generating leads and then building relationships off of the back of that or a bit of both?
Bit of both.
Okay.
So when I had stepped out and I was the team leader and then throw my hat back in the ring, that was more based off of relationships that I had, people asking me or saying, oh my gosh, we're having the worst experiences. Could you just sell our house or could you just help? I'm like, okay, I'll throw my hat back in the ring. You know, I'll do a couple transactions a year. And then that grew to a 7-person team within 24 months. So that was built more off of relationships I had established, but starting over in other states where I knew no one, that was going out, boots on the ground, handing out my card. I was the person that went to Barnes & Noble and would stand by the for sale by owner real estate books and put my business cards in them or just casually talk to the people that I saw looking at, like, how are they going to sell their own house? So whatever it took, just starting conversations. I wore my realtor pin around. People like to talk about real estate, so standing in the line at Starbucks, pushing myself out of my comfort zone to engage conversations in any way, shape, or form. and then utilizing social media to be authentic and go in and look at my friends, look at my people that I'm connected with. Are they having birthdays? Are they having babies? Are they getting married? Are they getting divorced? You know, how can I make sure that I'm engaging in their pages so that the phone and the messages come in the other direction, which is really where real estate gets fun.
Yeah, it's really about those inbound leads, right? You've built yourself a brand as an agent, and then people know you, like you, trust you, and they come to you. Let's talk a little bit about building the team out. So obviously you'd built a brokerage before mm-hmm. you step back into real estate. At what point did you decide to start building a team? How did you go about it? Who did you look to hire? I think a lot of our listeners are at points in their career where they could really grow, but they're limited by the fact that it's just them. So yeah. How did you build that team? Why did you build that team?
Coming out of the TL role with KW, where we did a lot of training on how to build a team. Yeah. When I was then physically in that position myself, I'm thinking, okay, what did I used to coach people to? And I wasn't really coaching people to building a big traditional team. I think that you can have great success with a fantastic admin and a buyer's agent if you want to stay involved in transactions.
Yeah.
So when I was looking to build a team, most people, they're afraid, again, the fear to put a salary out for an admin, even transaction coordination. So often people try to bring in a buyer's agent or a showing assistant, and they want them to do work, but they don't want to pay them. You know, they just mm-hmm. want them to get a little percentage, which is okay. And if you can show a path to someone of how they can grow from showing agent to full buyer's agent, you can find some great talent. For me, I did bite the bullet and I just said, okay, I need 3 months of salary for an admin. And this is what I want my admin to do. I was very clear about what stuff I didn't like doing, what stuff I didn't need to do. I do tell people, write down everything that you do. Circle the stuff that only you can do, right? And those are pretty much only client relationship, right, face-to-face stuff. And then put the stuff that you don't like to do and you don't want to do. And then that becomes what you're looking for as far as an admin. What type of person do you want to work with? I do a lot of work with DISC. Yeah. So looking at behavioral assessments, just about having the right behavioral fit for what I viewed as I needed for that part of the team. So doing a lot of heavy lifting on the front end to really identify someone, because it's a lot of time, effort, and money to train someone from scratch. And there's certain things you can train, certain things you can't. Yeah. So admin and then showing assistant, that basically I found that most recently, the people I was bringing in, they didn't like the word assistant. They didn't like the label assistant. And I don't know if it's a millennial thing, and I'm all for millennials, but I know labels and titles are important. So yeah. I would let them pick something. We would typically land on apprentice. And that was like, I'm Mama Bird. You're coming under my wing. You are in my car when I'm in my car. Your life is my life right now. But right. You're going to learn hands-on what this business is about. And I was not the best at putting systems into writing. And that's where I really needed administrative support to put those procedures together, because I failed miserably at that. I find a lot of team leaders, it's not their forte. Yeah. So strong admin with a showing assistant that worked into a buyer's agent that was committed full time, and that I knew what their motivation was and their commitment level. Like, I would try to scare them out of it in the beginning.
Yeah. It's a good way of going about it. And I think, like, you touched on that, the mistake a lot of agents make is that they don't put an actual process in place. It's kind of like just showing, this is what I do, so you should do it too. Doesn't really have a sustainable outcome, right? And the other thing is knowing, you know, you put money aside to pay for the assistant or the apprentice or whatever their label or their title was, mm-hmm. Knowing that maybe you have to, for a year, you're going to not make as much commission as you did the prior year, but in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to make 3-4 times that. Yeah. But it takes a little bit of investment of time and money. I think that's something that a lot of people overlook when they're trying to build a team, and then they get frustrated. They, you know, kind of keep all the money for themselves, and then they don't want to kind of share it around.
Slowing down to speed up.
Yes.
Slowing down to speed up, one. And two, biggest mistake. First question I ask someone, do you consider yourself an employee or a business owner? Mm-hmm. And a lot of real estate agents have an employee mindset. And they don't treat their business like a business.
Yes. And that's actually applicable across a lot of industries. I know quite a few business owners who they created a job for themselves. They didn't actually create a business.
Yes.
All right. I want to touch on the word. I don't want to say it because it's your word. But it's very applicable because when times get tough, and even a lot of agents get into this business, it's not their main gig. You know, I'm an example of that. It's not my main thing. I'm back in real estate because I love it. But it's not my main thing. It's very easy to get, number one, distracted. Number two, just lose the drive and the motivation because you're not going to get the fruits of your labor as quickly as you would if you were doing it full time. And even if you are doing it full time, it's a tough gig. So
there's no such thing as part-time real estate. You just have two full-time jobs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So how do people stay committed? How do they stay motivated? Let's kind of dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm going to give my hashtag, my word that I coined, committivation. And this came from me being committed to my own personal health journey. Yeah. And then hearing a lot of my clients and friends saying, you know, how are you doing it? How are you in the gym this many times a week or at, 8 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock in the morning? I don't have that motivation or my willpower. And I started to get really frustrated as a coach and as a friend. And I'm like, it's not about motivation. It's not about willpower. Yes, we utilize those things. We tap into them. But truly, life changes when you get committed. So I call it commitivation. It's commitment, true commitment to yourself and what you're saying is important to you and what you are deciding to do, combined with motivation, combined with willpower. But commitment is what kicks in when you don't feel like doing it.
Right.
When you don't feel like making the calls, when you don't feel like driving to the gym, when you want to blame million other people. That's where the true commitment and accountability kick into that. So
yeah,
I could keep going, but ask me some great questions. I know you have.
Well, no, it's a lot of it's about prioritizing, right? And I'll use a personal example for kind of illustrating it or demonstrating it. I, for a long time, was one of those hustlers, always grinding. I could get by on like 4 hours of sleep, and that. Started, I was a milkman, so I was working all night, and then I go to school the next day after a couple of hours of sleep. It's terrible when you think back about brain development, but I got to a point where I was like, I think sleep's kind of important. I should really work on this. And then I kind of realized I'm literally the last 2 hours of my night, 2 or 3 hours of my night, I'm just staying up to stay up. Mm-hmm. I don't need to watch TV. I don't need to be texting or on social media. And it wasn't anything to do with willpower. It was just like I prioritized the thing versus the other thing. And I think of a lot, you're saying you get frustrated with people who, how do you get up and go to the gym so early? It was like, well, I prioritized that over sleeping in and over staying up late the night before. How can people kind of change the way they perceive these kind of things?
Oh, I love this question. So like you said, you prioritize, but a lot of people are really stuck because they don't have clarity around what their priorities are.
Yeah.
And the truth is that they don't have clarity around who they are or who they want to be, who they want to be showing up as. So through coaching, we have a technique called chunking. And we'll take someone's goal and then really dig down to find what is their true motivation? What is it about this goal that resonates from within them? And typically we'll get to something, what we call an I am statement. I'll use my personal example. Going on a health and fitness journey, losing weight, getting physically fit, I took on an identity that I did not believe. My subconscious was like, who are you kidding? Like, you're not. My identity was, I am an athlete. And even though my subconscious was going, you're not an athlete. Like, who are you trying to kid? That's what I committed to. And my identity became, I am an athlete. And then from that identity that you choose, you get to create a filter question, I call. So for me, my filter question is, would an athlete do this or would an athlete not do this? Would an athlete put this in their mouth or not put this in their mouth? Right. What would an athlete do right now? So that became if the answer was yes, this is what an athlete would do, that's how I made my decision. If the answer was like, no, an athlete would not do that, I didn't have to use any brain power. The answer is no, then I don't do it. And if it's a maybe, it's also a no. It has to be a hell yes.
Yeah.
So identifying who is it that you are? What is your I am statement? And really digging down deep enough, it's not like I'm a $1 million agent. Okay, that's all fine and dandy, but we know that that's going to go out the window just like the last motivation that you had.
Yeah.
So really digging down to what that means and then asking yourself, what does that type of person do? Then you've got your filter questions, so you don't have to spend tons of time making decisions. And then you are showing your subconscious like, yeah, I know you were fighting me before because you said I wasn't this, but look, I am this. And every time you do what you say you're going to do, you build self-confidence in yourself. And then when you have your self-confidence going, it doesn't matter if you are trying to get more clients or be in a healthy relationship or, you know, get into the gym. When you can trust yourself, every single door opens.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. It's kind of similar to the creating an alter ego and then becoming mm-hmm. that, right? But mm-hmm. I like this, that you become the person that you want to be.
Yeah.
It's very similar to a concept I came across a couple of years ago. I really like the idea of where, you know, you kind of get in the mindset that there is in another universe, there is another you, they're exactly who you want to be. And they're doing exactly what they need to do in order for you to become that person. So, you know, if you're sitting around doing nothing, the other version of you is at the gym. And so you're constantly telling yourself, oh, I should be doing this. I should be doing this. Very similar concept. Like you become who you want to be and you kind of manifest it.
Yeah. You tell your subconscious to look for it. So like if you ever went to buy a new car and you're looking at a white BMW, all of a sudden you start seeing white BMWs everywhere. It's not that everyone just went and bought white BMWs. It's that you told your subconscious, this is what I want you to look for. I'm focused on this.
Yeah.
So when you tell your subconscious, start looking at the wins when I do what I say I'm going to do, when I'm doing these things that support my I am statements, it becomes so powerful. And then that's where you don't need willpower.
Right. Sorry, I'm getting attacked by a fly over here.
I
actually saw a video you posted where you talked about this, that it was do be, I am an athlete. Let's back up to that do be. That's basically it, right? Do what you want to be.
Yeah, do be have.
Do be have.
Like people, I want to have this, right? Okay, if you want to have this, what do you need to do in order to have?
Right.
What do you need to do? Who do you need to be in order to have? So be, do, have. I'm reminded, that was about a year ago that I posted that video. That was like a big change for me. I think I just ran a 5K. I ran a 5K the morning I shot that video.
Okay.
And it's again, just mindset. Who do you have to be and what do you have to do in order to have? So again, I am an athlete. That's who I have to be. What do I have to do? I have to do the things that an athlete does. Or I am a top producing real estate agent. What I have to do, the things that top producing real estate agents do in order to have what top producing real estate agents have. Not only you have to do them, you have to do them consistently. You have to do them when you don't feel like doing it. And that's where having accountability with having accountability buddies, coaches, mentors, alignment with other really smart people, hopefully people that are even smarter than you, making sure that you're spending time in those rooms and around people that are leveled up from where you want to be.
Yeah. And on the topic of do, I think we'll kind of wrap up after this. This has gone really quick. It's great. You explained the time matrix quadrant very well. I really enjoyed your explanation of it. So I figured that's something good for our listeners to hear is how you explain that, because it's very, very important to keep focused and keep dialed in, especially as an agent, because I remember just sitting there, I'd be scrolling the MLS trying to kill time. And, you know, you end up getting in this cycle of being busy doing nothing. So let's talk about that time matrix. Yeah. Busy. I heard you say that. That's good.
I'm going to have to ask you for a little leniency on the time matrix. I can talk about it a little bit. I don't have it up in front of me.
Oh, yeah.
But time and just talking about time blocking, which the time quadrants fit into, looking at, you know, we look at like what's on fire, what has to get handled immediately, what can be leveraged. That's all things within the time matrix. But looking at time blocking, and often we think we can get a lot more done than we can. And then we wonder why it doesn't fit into our schedule. Mm-hmm. So I am very big on time blocking. First, prioritizing the tasks. That's going to be where time matrix comes in. And maybe we can get listeners a chart on that where they can start to learn, okay, what quadrant does this fit into? And then if it's something that they do need to personally tackle, how do they actually put that in their calendar? How much time is being blocked out? Are you giving yourself white space in between schedules so that if something goes over or you run a little bit late, you're not stressing out?
Yeah.
What stuff that can be moved, right? If you erase it, you must replace it. Like if you were going to make phone calls at 10 to 12, but your kiddo is homesick for some reason, we hear this a lot, mm-hmm. and you have to attend to them. Yeah, go be a parent. But it doesn't mean that that 2-hour call block gets wasted. You've got to put it somewhere else because that's the lead measures that lead to the lag measures, which is the money. Mm-hmm. But you either got to move it to somewhere else in that day, or you got to double up the next day, or you got to go to your support group. Okay, who can come in and you know watch the kids while I go get in my bunker and I bang out these calls? It must be done. So time matrix is really helpful to identify what you need to keep on your plate and what just needs to go off and what can be leveraged.
Yeah.
And if you want to build a team, that's important.
Oh, for sure. I remember seeing, I think it was on Twitter, I saw it where I think it was an ad for a time blocking app, but it, you know, it said Elon Musk and all these other billionaires, they don't have to-do lists. They just time block. And I always feel most productive. I've got to a point now where I used to have to sit and the night before, like block out all the chunks of my day. And I did it in 15, 30 minute increments. Now I'm at a place where I can just know, right, for this period, I'm only doing this. So much easier to get into flow state. So much easier to stay focused on exactly what you're doing. If you start, you know, getting distracted and trying to do 2-3 things at once, you do nothing well.
No. And every time you start and stop, there's studies that show it takes 15 minutes to get back into a groove. So if you start and stop 4 times a day, that's an hour lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a holistic coach, it's not an hour of work time. That's an hour that you lose with your family or with yourself or where you would have gone to the gym. All the stuff that we tend to say no to when we prioritize the other money-making stuff, but that we suffer the most with.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, we'll wrap it up here. How can people get hold of you? How can they view more of your content, work with you, reach out to you? What are
the apps? I'll keep it super easy. And it makes me sound so snobby, but TaraStone.com was not available. So I am the Tara Stone.
Tara_Stone on Instagram,
or we're actually just about to launch a new website, which is going to have all of our coaching offerings, which will be thetarastone.com. So you can go to Instagram and follow there, or within about a week and a half, our website will be relaunched under the Tara Stone. And I just welcome everyone. Reach out. If you're struggling with anything, if I can be a connector or I can come alongside you, like this is where my passion is in life. And because of the amount of real estate experience that I have, and you know, from the highest highs to the lowest lows to building teams, I'm super passionate about helping agents, especially in markets like this, where I believe we have the greatest opportunities.
Yeah, I agree too. I was just saying to someone earlier that, you know, in these times, if you can really get yourself aligned and focused, it's when you can really thrive. Because when it's real easy and you can just bump into someone on the street that wants to buy a house, you know, and houses are flying off the market real quick, it's a different game. But if you can really get focused now, there's a lot of business out there.
And it's a freaking phenomenal business. Like, you know, seeing all the cycles, honestly, I love the change in it. I think that's why a lot of people are attracted to it. So it's always going to be cyclical. It's always going to be changing. And that's a great part of the business. It's just if you can be flexible enough to continue to evolve with it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Tara, that was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.